Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, Fred Obiero.
Hello, and welcome to the Ivy Podcast. My guest today is Craig Richardville, Chief Digital and Information Officer at Intermountain Healthcare. How are you, Craig? How's your weekend?
Great, Fred. How was yours?
Mine was wonderful. Thanks.
Good.
Before we start this episode, I have one small request to our listeners. As we continue to grow the Ivy Podcast, we would appreciate if you would take just a minute of your time to leave us a review on the show, because reviews make a huge difference to podcast channels like ours. Now, time for the episode with Craig. So Craig, tell us a little bit about yourself and Intermountain Healthcare for those that may not be familiar.
Yeah, well, thank you, Fred. It's a pleasure to be here. First and foremost, I am the proud father of just three amazing sons who are all young adults and just very, very proud of them and what they're accomplishing and their future moving forward. Professionally, I cut my teeth at ProMedica Health System out of Toledo, Ohio. I spent 11 years with ProMedica. I then moved to Atrium Health down in Charlotte, North Carolina. And I was there for 21 years and was the chief information and analytics officer at Atrium. I spent 3 years at SCL Health out here in Denver as the chief information and digital officer. And now with the merger with Intermountain Healthcare, I am the chief digital and information officer for Intermountain Healthcare. Now, regarding Intermountain Healthcare, it is actually an amazing model, both historically, currently, and for the future of healthcare. It's a global brand. It has a lot of national recognitions and extreme success with quality and cost. Intermountain has a culture of innovation, of investment and impact. It's about a $15 billion annual revenue with a mixture of hospitals, providers, and payers across 8 states. We focus on access, affordability, and value. And a big focus in the future is going to be that risk, the value piece, taking clinical and financial risk. And with that, you start seeing a shift. And this is the future model of healthcare, a shift from not only delivering high quality, affordable care, but really a focus on health. So taking healthcare, still doing high quality work on the care side, but a renewed focus on health around early detection, prevention, and keeping people outside of the care side of the healthcare system.
Thanks for that intro, Craig. And given your extensive background as CIO, this second question is tailor-made for you. The role of the CIO has evolved over the last decade, given the proliferation of data and increased use of technology. In your time as CIO, in recent years especially, how has the role of the healthcare CIO transformed? Please share any examples you may have.
Yeah, great, Fred. Great question, because it really has been an evolution, and it really has accelerated over the last decade, as you suggest. The CIO initially was a big focus on hardware. It was a focus on the finances, used more as an expense center. People would call it a necessary evil, and you talked about data centers and networks, and most of your devices were fixed devices, you know, PCs, personal computers. And then you started seeing the next phase come out for the CIO, and it was more of a focus on software. And with the focus on software, you looked at things moving from a CFO's eyes more into a chief operating officer, where we focused on data capture, efficiencies, workflow, and truly changing how the caregivers interacted with the system for the patients and for our guests. The next evolution, which started for me at Atrium Health, was a focus on data and analytics. And that's where the title of the Chief Information and Analytics Officer grew from. And you took the software, the data from the software, and you started making decisions based upon the data that you were receiving. And you focused on the analytics aspect of it by an integration with external data. So not only the data that you managed, from the software programs, but you started going outside, bringing that into as well. And that brings us to where we are today, which is on the digital side, really a focus on digital. And you see the CDIO, the Chief Digital and Information Officer, starting to get a lot of spotlight, because now we're focusing upon not only the cloud like in the past, but we're focusing upon mobility, the consumer, patients and members, really looking at the patients as a guest. So a whole focus on consumerism and starting to develop tools in terms of examples that you would have is if you looked at back in the day when you would go into a bank branch and you would go through and deposit a check or withdraw cash, whatever that was. Now you do that all with your phone.
Right.
And all that clerical work has gone away and you're happy to do it, self-service it. We're seeing that now in healthcare, starting to move away from a focus upon having you always come to us, like having us come to you. And that smartphone is one way for us to reach you.
Wonderful. Now, there's one quick follow-up I have when you talk about analytics and incorporating data from external sources and enriching your own internal data. What's the biggest driver behind that? Is it because the data that you have internally may not be sufficient for an organization to make the right decisions? Or is it only just for using industry analytics, for example, and tying that to how you're seeing the data from within? How has that worked in your experience?
Yeah, it really is a combination. Data to me is the key for us, our success moving forward. And we have a proliferation of data coming into our healthcare system. And there's a lot more out there that we can start relating to, and things like social determinants of health and other aspects of how to treat and take care of a patient or a member or a guest or a consumer. And so from that standpoint, you're starting to look at the amount of data that we receive, and some people will suggest anywhere between 25 and 30, maybe 35% of the system that you need to treat somebody is clinically related. Uh-huh. And 2/3 of the system of the data that you need is really outside of that. And there's a lot of correlations between different aspects of your life and your health. Some of it could be knowing about your family history. Some of it could be knowing about where you live. Do you have transportation? Right. You can look at somebody's credit score, and based upon their credit score, there's a correlation of how he or she may or may not have the ability to take care of themselves. And so we may have to provide additional resources for those who maybe can't manage their money, maybe have a difficult managing their health, and we're here to help serve them.
Many healthcare organizations expanded their telehealth services, especially during the COVID-19 pandemic, which was necessitated, which actually necessitated the rollout of such services. Could you walk us through some of the main barriers and challenges faced with implementing a rapid expansion of telehealth services?
Yeah, Fred, that was really a blessing for the whole industry, some of the good stuff that's come out of some of the COVID. Yeah. And one of them was an acceleration into the telehealth services, because the physical contact and people being outside or out in the public or running into people was not something that was looked upon favorably. So telehealth took off. Certainly went from, a 1% probably in our industry, or less than 1%, to well into the double digits, to 30 and 40% at some of the peak times.
Wow, that's under 2 years.
Yeah. And now it's resettled right around 10%, 8 to 10. Some may get up to 12. But I think part of the focus is similar to that previous banking example, is to start to shift our mindset from telehealth to online health. Uh-huh. Because the tele part only connects two people, just like you and I today. It's right. Connecting us together. And that's what the telehealth typically does. It's a visit without having to have the physical movement in between, but I'm still connecting two people. And if you go back through the banking example, if you remember when we used to have the drive-throughs, and we still do it some locations, you're just connecting two people just after hours, but I could drive through and there still was a human on the other side. So it was still expensive to process that transaction, because I had to be there and the human had to be there.
Right.
Now, when you look at online shopping, you look at online banking, the machine is doing that work. When I deposit a check now versus standing in line or going through a drive-through, I now can do that with an ATM machine or just take a picture of it with my phone. And the human aspect of processing that transaction is no longer necessary. And that's part of our transition. We need to move into online health. Just like when you online shop and with the retail side, and we're doing that all day long, it seems like in our personal life. It's not like I'm connecting to somebody on the other side who's now listening to my order or receiving my email and typing it all in. The system is doing all that. So all of that lower level, high volume, transactional, very predictable work is now done by the machine. And that's the transition, I think, Fred, we need to start moving ourselves toward, is from a terminology perspective outside of telehealth, move that to online health, but the machine can do a lot of that processing versus just connecting two humans together.
Yeah, you're right that a lot of automation that's, I think it's necessary to advance humanity towards, especially those predictive, repetitive tasks that you alluded to. Please share any best practices that healthcare companies can follow when rolling out new technological services nationwide. I think there's a lot of companies that struggle with that. And given your expertise in this space, you may have some insights that may be very valuable to a lot of listeners.
Yeah, thanks for that. I think first and foremost, you really need to understand what the demand is coming in so that you can create the right supply to provide that service. Probably one of the worst things you could do is provide the service to be, you know, near or real time, and then people have to wait for the service. So understanding the demand that's coming in and whether that where those peaks and valleys are, so you can make sure that you have the capacity set up in order to achieve that coming in. And if there's something else that happens, you know, it's kind of like Black Friday when people shop, we know there'll be a huge demand. So, you know, the services side, the supply side is ramped up, knowing that on that Friday, there's going to be a ton of people coming into stores or going in online. And so people are prepared for that. And so part of it's going to be that understanding, you know, your communities that you serve. I think internally, you need to figure out whether you want to be centralized or decentralized with the service. Is this something that I'm going to do in person, you know, for 2, 3, 4 hours, or maybe on certain days I'm in person with certain days that I'm doing it online or telehealth, and really focus upon that? Or is this a specialty where I actually have a center, a virtual hospital or a virtual clinic that does nothing but manages all the virtual services or the online or telehealth services coming in? And then break that out obviously by specialty and make sure you've got the right skill set there to process and to take care of the needs of, that are coming in through electronically. So that's another, I think, big piece. And then also the last one I would say is just the adoption, getting the marketing out there, letting people know that this is as good, if not better, than an in-person service, because you have the convenience of just doing it on your phone, doing it at work, doing it at home, versus the driving and sitting down and waiting and going through maybe what would be more of a traditional process, just like the banking example. You got to get that out there so that people understand the value proposition of moving to online services in the healthcare industry versus in person.
So in my past, I've overseen major implementations of EMRs and EHRs. And one of the challenges that I know even to this day that people still face while doing those is resistance to change. You may have a physician that prefers this system to the other and they don't want to move from that. How do you, from a leadership perspective, influence change so that not only the customers who are, you know, the patients that are going to be benefiting from the services, but then the doctors, the nurses, anybody that's working on the healthcare side, see the benefit of migrating to a newer system? How do you influence that change?
Yeah, that's one of those things that it's really becoming more of a standard of practice. So people who are coming out of medical school, people that are coming out of residency, people that are now getting into that on the provider side, and my middle son is a physician, they expect and want to use the tools. Uh-huh. They really are being educated and trained, and we need more of that because that's the environment that they've been educated on, and that's becoming more and more on the tele side. And if you look at from the patient side, it's an expectation. And we all have choices in many cases, certainly for lower level services, you know, where you have a high deductible plan. You know, I can make a choice. And if you're going to force me to come in and my preference is not, then I'm going to go somewhere else and receive my healthcare service. That's consumerism piece. And so you've seen a whole shift from decades ago when healthcare, you know, started to become a very large part of our GDP. It was a very provider focused, you know, hours were, you know, 9 to 5 or 8 to 4, because that was what was convenient for the provider. But it wasn't the most inconvenient time for me as a consumer, because many of us worked during that time. So now you're seeing a shift, and that's why you've got the expanded hours, the urgent cares, the online services, because now really the focus over the last decade or so has been on the patient, on the member, on the consumer who now has choices. And we want to provide the best cost at the most convenient time and the highest quality. So that whole aspect of providing that service to them, it really has to be convenient for them to be able to make that. That's typically 7:24. If I get up in the middle of the night and I need some help or I don't feel well, and I really feel the need to have to talk to somebody, I need to be able to take out my phone or sit on my computer and connect.
Yeah.
And no different if I had the urge, I need to buy a special, you know, whatever, that I can get up and I can buy that too. So healthcare has to be as convenient as all these other services are.
Advanced technologies such as AI, machine learning, and deep learning are becoming heavily adopted across multiple industries as companies gain access to more and more data. In the healthcare space, what does the adoption of AI look like? Has it become a requirement in order to generate better clinical and healthcare outcomes?
Yeah, that's a great question. And that is a big part, certainly a significant part of our future, is to really utilize the intelligence. And what I like to do is kind of like the telehealth, moving that to online health, artificial intelligence, AI, I like to call more like advanced intelligence, because it's not fake, it's not artificial. It actually helps me make a better decision. And the way that we're looking at and the way that the industry is leaning toward is it's a combination of the provider and the machine in order to make the best decision. No different than what you see when you're in your car and you use your GPS system. It will continue to tell you where there's traffic jams or maybe a different route you need to take. All that intelligence is built into it. But you might be able to say, yeah, I know that now I need to get off and get back on several miles down the road because there's an accident here. But I also know another way, another path to get somewhere else. And so that allows me then to be able to make that. So the combination, I think, of the machine, the artificial intelligence, and of the human intelligence, that combination makes for the best outcome moving forward. And so, I think this is a really fun part because it's really taking some of the subjectivity out. It's making the decisions based upon data. It's helping guiding the provider to make more informed decisions. And as you start seeing some of the confidence factors go up, those are similar tools that we want to put in the hands of our patients and really start driving toward more self-service. So no different than if the provider is receiving some kind of input that you're putting into it, it can help determine and educate you as the patient to help take care of yourself based upon that information, maybe without a person becoming involved.
Craig, there's something that you said there that I think I'm going to apply myself going forward. Artificial intelligence, you called it advanced intelligence. I agree with that. And I think they should probably rename it, because it's not artificial. It's using data and facts to make better decisions. And as we all know, computers don't forget. Humans may forget things. I like the terminology that you use there, advanced intelligence. All right. So the current U.S. unemployment rate is at 3.6% based on the latest economic numbers. And there is a shortage of talent across healthcare, particularly in the IT divisions. In your role, what steps are you taking to try and combat the shortage of tech talent and showcase Intermountain Healthcare as a premier company to work for?
Yeah, there's several things here. You're teasing out a whole aspect of a discussion that can cross many industries, similar to like the some of the previous ones as well. This is very important for us to be able to accelerate our advancement and provide the services to our communities. Within the IT area and within healthcare, there's a couple things that I like to focus on. One is, you know, we need to come to the understanding that with some of the younger millennials and certainly the Generation Z, that this is a skilled trade. This is a skill that people are learning as they're going through middle school, as they're going through high school. And the requirements to have a four-year degree in a technical field really is not applicable in the future. I think mm-hmm. people coming out of school, maybe still in high school, but coming out of 12th grade, they and some of them have great skills. They've done some programming. They've done some work on websites. They've done some things on apps, you know, for phones. And those, they can come in and have an immediate impact.
Right.
As you know, there's a part of maturing and growing up and all that that goes along with it. So you, I think, need us to understand that there's maybe a little bit more management with some of the newer people coming in, as opposed to maybe leadership and allowing them the opportunities. Probably got to put a little more hands-on in there. And from that standpoint, though, you know, we really want to reduce, if not eliminate, the requirement for a degree unless it's absolutely necessary for the skill that you're looking to attain. So things like certifications are going to become more and more prevalent in the IT world. Mm-hmm. So somebody comes out and they may be in their late teens, early 20s, they've got a certification in Google and Microsoft and AWS or Oracle, you pick it. Those are people are going to be very attractive because they're not only have the skills potentially coming in, but they can also see that, you know, they want to grow and develop, and they're kind of self-learning, and that's a nice attribute to have. I think also for people who are in your organization, providing them the opportunities to grow and develop. And if they are really good in their current space and their current level, they may also be able to contribute more with a little more guidance or a little more education and give them that ability. I'll give you a simple example. In the last 3 years, we have end user analysts. So basically technicians that support different parts of the organization. Uh-huh. And there's also some that support the executive team. And they have to have a little bit more higher skills, understanding the preciseness of the work and when to intervene, when not to intervene, and get things out quickly, replace things, et cetera. But, you know, one of the things that we've done here is when I've seen those people who service me and the people that I sit next to, one of them within a year, it was like, you can do a lot more than this type of work. And we gave him the opportunity to join the Google team. He got certified and he ended up leaving the organization. And he did for a 40% increase a year later.
Wow.
So you got to be very happy for that. If that was your child, you'd be really happy. And,
exactly.
And I couldn't afford that, but somebody else could. And so I was really happy to help him move from a certain level a position where he could have been there for the next decade, if not the rest of his career, build a new skill set, and now he's more marketable to the outside. Same thing with another person who came in, and now he works for Homeland Security on the cybersecurity side. The guy that followed him, he can do a lot more than just service me. And so now he went in, we put him in cybersecurity, got a couple of certifications, and now he's helping protect our country. So, you know, what a gift that is for him to grow and develop that way. And then the third one that replaced him, he now just got a recent promotion internally, and he's going to be here hopefully for a while longer. But he's doing now more analytics type engineer kind of work versus technician work. So grow and develop your people, you know, kind of become that professional parent, I think is an important aspect to retain people within your company, or at least help them find something else that is more beneficial for them. So developing people inside is another important component.
This is a wonderful promo for, you know, Mountain Healthcare, and for any of our listeners who want to accelerate and move rapidly in their career progress, I think they should look at Craig's job postings on their website. So this is wonderful.
Thank you.
Here. All right, last question, Craig. What has helped you to get to where you are And what word of advice would you give to someone that wants to pursue a career that's identical to yours?
Yeah, I can tell you that, you know, the difference for me was early in my career, and maybe this is the same for others, I see it every now and then. You kind of become, you think you are a know-it-all, and you have all the answers, and you're moving really, and then you really realize that, you know, you got to be a lot more humble, and you have to learn to listen and expand your network, get to know people, get to know not only the skills that they have, but get to know them as a person. You know, what is their passion? And probably the biggest thing for me is just being fortunate enough to have a few key mentors, especially early on in my career, to help guide me in terms of when I was maybe going down the wrong path. So overall, I would say the first one is just to learn to listen and to be able to, you know, digest and consume other people's experiences. And that's, you know, between you and I, that's kind of how you make better decisions anyway, is by having more intel coming in. So never get to the point that you think you have all the answers. The other one is to learn. You know, I like to say to be a student for life. I'm always learning. I'm learning from my kids nearly every day because we talk on a regular basis. Uh-huh. I'm learning from my peers. I'm learning from the people that work for me, who I'm privileged to serve. It's really just learning from others. Just continue to grow yourself. And there's a lot of opportunities to grow. I'm taking a class this month to advance some more skills in some of the digital arenas. And so I'm going to take a certification course for the next 6 weeks because I want to continue to grow and develop myself. And then the last thing kind of relates to the top one is there's no better gift in life than to be that professional parent in this world to help grow not only your children, if you are a personal parent, and have them be better than what you are and more contributory to the world. The same thing I think applies for us professionally, just like the person that went on to help serve his family better, provide mm-hmm. for his family because he was able to move on, or one that is in Homeland Security now protecting us. As a professional parent, to watch people grow and develop and that you played a small part in allowing that is really a gift, and it's very fulfilling. So listen, learn, and grow people.
Craig, I've really enjoyed our discussion. Thank you so much for being with us.
Fred, thank you. I enjoyed it as well.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of Ivy Podcast. Please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe on your preferred podcast listening platform. We really appreciate that effort. Until next time.